This is the TTY Dialer, episode 20, for the week of March 6th through March 11th. Hi, I'm Mark Levonier, and this is your weekly companion to WRVO's old-time radio show, Tuned to Yesterday. Every single night on the air and streaming online, we bring you the golden age of radio. And this podcast brings you some fun with sound from radio's yesteryear, radio history, and a look at the shows coming up for the week on Tuned to Yesterday, making it best listened to on Sundays or Mondays. Now, the shows we air are from the time period of about the 1930s through the early 1960s. There was plenty of radio in the 1920s, but it's not really a big part of our collection of reel-to-reel shows that numbers at about 16,000. But what is in our collection and what exists out in the wild today really runs the gamut of all genres: comedy, western, drama, action, science fiction, suspense, and much, much more. And several of those programs that were on the air at the time would end up transcending their own medium and helping out television, particularly in the early 1950s. The most memorable themes of the 20th century, and in honor of this 20th podcast here at Tuned to Yesterday, sort of a milestone, this will be the Dragnet Show. Now, what I like to do once a year, at least for the past 4 or 5 years, is have a movie night with fans of Tuned to Yesterday and old-time radio, and we rent out a theater or a conference hall, and I give a presentation right before the film. Now, I was thinking that none of these have been recorded, but I still have all the material from it. So in this podcast, I'll be bringing you that pre-film presentation, which was strictly audio only, so there's no real reason to feel that you missed out on the live show. And in between, I'll go over the shows coming up for the week on Tuned to Yesterday. But for now, let's get back to it. That theme is actually titled The Dragnet March, and was first heard on NBC Radio on June 17, 1949, and would end up becoming as familiar as the William Tell Overture you might know from The Lone Ranger. In early 1949, a 36-year-old musician named Walter Schumann, whose previous work was as a conductor for Armed Forces Radio during World War II, was commissioned as the composer for two new radio themes, one being the story of Dr. Kildare, and a new police drama to be heard on NBC Radio beginning that summer. So, with his self-admitted influence of the score from the Ernest Hemingway movie The Killers, he would write what is often referred to as possibly the most famous four-note introduction since Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, which most likely helped the series out more than its original music.
Dragnet!
While not terrible, it was a bit generic and was replaced after just two episodes. But probably even more memorable than the music was the star and creator of Dragnet, Jack Webb.
Ladies and gentlemen, this material has been approved by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. We wish to thank the Federal Bureau of Investigation for this material, which they assure us is material.
Is it Dick Tracy?
No.
Is it Sherlock Holmes?
No.
Is it Mr. North?
No.
Is it Mrs. North?
No.
Is it the Thin Man?
No.
The Fat Man?
No.
The Saint?
No.
The Wizard?
No.
The Rod?
No,
the Bat? The Green Hornet? The Spider? The Dog? The Cat? The Mouse?
No!
It's the Razor!
He's sharp.
Was that not the Jack Webb you were expecting? That was indeed Jack, starring in the comedy program called The Jack Webb Show, which was one of his earliest forays into acting on the air. And he starred in some powerful drama on the station that show was broadcast out of. And we'll hear that in just a moment. But first, I wanted to tell you about what's coming up this Monday night, March 6th, on Tuned to Yesterday. We have an hour of mystery to start. It's Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons from 1944. Maybe an obscure title today, but one of the most listened to shows back then. After that, it's Suspense from 1949. Then it's an hour of westerns at 11, the All-Star Western Theater from 1946. Then Gene Autry's Melody Ranch from 1955. This Tuesday night, March 7th, it's comedy from The Fred Allen Show. His guests are Mr. and Mrs. James Mason from 1948, then Red Skelton from 1944. At 11 o'clock Tuesday night, it's True History from episodes of The Cavalcade of America and the Hallmark Playhouse with the play John Adams on the American Revolution.
It was nearer than any of us knew. On a clear, cold morning in April, the soldiers of the king and the farmers of Massachusetts lay dead in the field of Lexington and Concord.
Gentlemen, the time has come. I nominate as commander-in-chief of the Grand American Army, Colonel Washington of Virginia.
You can hear these shows live on the air or streaming live at our website, wrvo.org, Monday, March 6th and Tuesday, March 7th from 10 to midnight. Now let's get back to the story of Radio's Dragnet. The last we heard, Jack Webb was in his own comedy show.
He's sharp.
And that was broadcast out of San Francisco station KGO during the spring of 1946. And it was while he was there that Jack Webb cut his teeth behind the microphone. He would practice off of the air for hours in front of an unplugged mic and ended up sculpting a well-modulated voice that we're now familiar with. He would also help formulate programs on that station that would give him his very first dramatic roles, like the show One Out of Seven, where Jack would narrate and play all of the roles while dramatizing an important event or profiling a newsmaker. And this is where you can first hear, at least on the air, Webb's sense of morality and justice that would play out in a powerful way in future Dragnet episodes. Here's Jack profiling the then racist and segregationist Senator Theodore Bilbo. And again, Jack plays every single part.
Scene: the chamber of the United States Senate. Time: the 30th of June, 1945. Senator Bilbo is filibustering against passage of the Fair Employment Practices Commission. And during his prolonged dissertation to the gentlemen of the Senate, the following occurs.
The senator from Mississippi may continue.
Thank you. Gentlemen, I have been hearing much talk about the supposed bravery of our Negro soldiers. I have it on good authority and from some of the highest ranking generals in our army that our Negro troops overseas are an utter and abysmal failure. They're just no good. And as for giving them a vote, why, they'd only sell their votes to the highest bidder anyway. So why give it to them in the first place?
This was indeed heavy material for Americans in 1946, where racism and bigotry were more of a stark reality, and brave broadcasting moves by those like Jack Webb and other producers truly helped open some of the eyes of the public. The show was sort of a 60 minutes of its day. And although Jack Webb's time at KGO was brief, it served him well in the way that it helped put his name out to the public and established a relationship with the writer of his comedy show, Richard Breen. It was through their partnership that kept them together for Jack's first hard-boiled role on the air, which Breen wrote and suggested Jack underplay as the leading man in Pat Novak for Hire.
She sauntered in, moving slowly from side to side like 118 pounds of warm smoke. Her voice was all right, too. It reminded you of a furnace full of marshmallows.
Good evening.
Yeah, thanks for knocking.
I don't think you mind my coming in without warning.
No, I get the cabbage smell from next door the same way.
Does it pay to be that polite, Mr. Novak?
Saves you the trouble of saying please. What's on your mind?
That bottle in front of you. Will you pour me a drink?
No. You'll save dough if you look up a bartender.
By my count, we just heard no less than 5 one-liners in 28 seconds, and that was precisely the formula that made this crime show very popular with ABC radio listeners on the West Coast in 1946. Evidently, they couldn't care less about the seemingly repeated plots. They just wanted to hear Breen's lines and Jack Webb's delivery. And we'll hear more of that in a few moments. This Wednesday on Tune to Yesterday on March 8th at 10 o'clock, it's science fiction from broadcasts of X-1 and Exploring Tomorrow. Then 2 crime shows on the air. At 11, it's Prowl Car, an audition broadcast that never made it to the national spotlight, and a broadcast of The Lone Wolf.
I still have the Christmas spirit. Maybe I can buy you another.
No, you can't. Not unless you're a millionaire.
A millionaire? Well, that leaves me out. Why would I have to be a millionaire?
Because he was made of solid gold.
Solid gold? Well, maybe you didn't lose him then. Maybe he was stolen.
I thought of that, but you'll help me find him, won't you?
What?
Well, I lost my Santa Claus, and if you're a gentleman, certainly you'd help me find him.
I see. Well, okay, I'll help you find him, but not because I'm a gentleman.
This Thursday, March 9th at 10 o'clock, drama from the Radio Reader's Digest, and a great play called The Lady from the Sea on the Philip Morris Playhouse from 1949. Then it's Horror at 11 from episodes of Quiet Please and The Haunting Hour with the story Murder Wears a Strange Mask. Hear these programs Wednesday, March 8th and Thursday, March 9th from 10 to midnight live on the air on Tune to Yesterday or as we stream it online at wrvo.org. So back to Dragnet. With the success of their first significant radio crime drama, Jack Webb and writer friend Richard Breen moved from San Francisco to Hollywood to try their luck, and they were able to secure a contract with the now-defunct Mutual Broadcasting System to write and star in a new radio show. And this was really great timing and an opportunity for them both, because in 1947, television was becoming a very real threat to radio, and the development of new programs was a dwindling part of the industry. While their next program was being created, Jack Webb was able to land a few roles on CBS radio programs like Suspense.
Coleman, we know you did it. Why don't you make it easy for yourself?
Make it easy for you coppers, you mean. I know you guys. Anything for a pinch. What do you care if you got the wrong guy?
All right.
Okay, Cass. Okay, you can lay off him.
You got something?
Yeah. Slug the Kid Lombard was a .32. His gun's a .38.
Huh?
What's the matter? Don't you like it here?
All right. But you'll have a sweet case of false arrest in your hands by morning. Remember that, copper, when you're back pounding a beat.
Oh, I won't forget. You're smart. Want a cigarette?
I wouldn't take a smoke from a copper if it was the last one before I die.
You may have a chance to prove that someday.
Yeah?
Yeah, when you go to the electric chair.
While Jack Webb was working on landing parts on the air, he was often cast in crime dramas, his roles split between good guy and bad in shows like CBS Radio's Escape, The Whistler, and The Adventures of Michael Shane with Jeff Chandler, where, for the first time, Webb was cast as a law enforcement officer.
Here, Shane. Drink this.
Where am I? Ooh.
You're at police headquarters, Shane, and the offer of this drink lasts 5 seconds. After that, it gets donated back to the police department, namely me.
Aside from that recurring role as Inspector LaFarve on the Michael Shane program, Jack's good guy roles really came in the form of the private investigator, of which he played several, at times simultaneously on the air in a 3-year span. After Jack and his writer friend Richard Breen left the Pat Novak for Hire series, which was a hit in San Francisco, they wanted to recreate the character for a national audience, but didn't own the rights. So together they recreated Novak and named the show Johnny Madero, Pier 23, which debuted in April of 1947.
What's on your mind?
I don't know, Madero. I don't know.
All right, you convinced me. Now back out of here and we'll both be in the dark.
Wait a minute, Madero. Listen to me. I'll pay you $50 a day to help me.
At that price, it won't be help.
I want you to find someone for me. For the last week, the name Pete Sutro's been on my mind. It's a nightmare. You've got to do something about it, Madero.
Change your diet. That might help.
I want you to find Pete Sutro. Find out who he is, where he is, why he's bothering me. If you do, I'll give you a $200 bonus.
Look, Finley, is this a job or a career? There must be a dozen Sutros from here to Jersey City.
Maybe, but the Pete Sutro I want lives right here in this town. He's got to.
There's a law?
Using a strikingly similar formula, Madero, like Novak, would get a job offer, a dead body would turn up, and Webb's character would become chief suspect until he solved the case. This would be the first time that Jack was leading man in a nationally heard show. It only lasted 6 months, but the near cult following Jack received from playing Madero parlayed into the network that paid him for bit parts on other shows, CBS, offering him the chance to play the same type of character now named Jeff Regan, Investigator.
My name's Jeff Regan. I get 10 a day in expenses from a detective bureau run by a guy named Anthony J. Lyon. They call me the Lion's Eye.
With Jack Webb as Jeff Regan, Investigator, stand by for hard-boiled action and mystery and thrilling adventure in tonight's story of The Man with the Key.
Jack would play Regan from July of 1948 through January of 1949, the same month that he confided to a Radio Life magazine reporter that his next character, quote, might be called Joe Friday. And we'll get back to his story in just a couple of moments, but first, let's talk for a second. Or at the very least, I have something for your consideration. Now, you listen to this podcast, meaning that you have a sense of how podcasts work and what they are. And I wonder if this week, if you couldn't try to get someone else to listen to a podcast. It doesn't even have to be this one. I know that you're in the know, but lots of people out there still don't know what podcasts are. You know, my parents are great examples. My mother enjoys podcasts every week, and she has a list of the ones that she likes. And my father can't seem to grasp the concept of what a podcast is, which is okay. It's a buzzword we've heard for a long time. And if you think about it, if you've never really looked into it or investigated it, you'll just not know what it is. So a great way to share with someone about what a podcast is, just tell them that it's an audio file that has a specific topic, and it could be any subject, but there is a focus and that there's some regularity to it. You can download it once a week, once a month, whenever it comes out. And if they're an iTunes user, you can subscribe to it pretty easily. There's a podcast I've been enjoying from time to time. The episodes don't even come out every week, but it's one called 20,000 Hertz, and it's made by sound designers for big Hollywood blockbuster movies. But what they do in their episodes is bring you down the path in the history of certain sounds from video games, let's say the NBC chimes they did, which brought me to their podcast in the first place. And the current episode is about car sounds. So I don't refer to myself as an audiophile ever, but I do enjoy sound and stories about it. If you'd like to download their podcast, you can find it at 20k, that's 20k.org, 20k.org. And the reason I'm bringing any of this up is because the more of us who listen to podcasts and are introduced to exactly what they are and how they work, the quality of podcasts in general will increase, and there will be even more options and more topics for us to listen to on demand. And there's also a social component to this. If you do choose this week to, you know, try this out, take a relative or a friend by the hand, show them how a podcast works, and you're on social media, hashtag it TryPod, TryPod. Help us out in this movement to get more people listening to podcasts in general. It's good for everybody. So, back to... We're in the middle of the story of how Dragnet came to be on radio, and he revealed in January of 1949 that his next character on the air might be called Joe Friday when he was playing Jeff Regan, Investigator. After that show closed, from February through June of 49, he would stay on the air in a different show, which was a national reboot of his first Pat Novak for Hire radio show on ABC, with experienced screen actor and radio newcomer Raymond Burr in the role of Inspector Hellman.
Where you been, Novak?
What do you care, Hellman?
All right, I'll tell you where I've been. In a third-floor room out in Clay Street.
I left one this afternoon.
It's the same one. Your fingerprints are all over the joint.
I'll bet you checked everywhere.
What were you doing out there?
Delivering flowers.
Is that your best try, Novak?
It's the best I'm going to do for you. If you don't like it, check with a woman out there. I brought her flowers and left.
What woman?
The one on the couch, a black-haired girl with a half-dead look.
You're wrong twice.
Huh?
There's no girl out there, unless she's tattooed on the guy's chest.
Oh.
And that guy doesn't have a half-dead look. It's better than that.
All the way.
That's right. He's dead enough to pray for. Will that do?
Incidentally, Raymond Burr would appear in every broadcast of Pat Novak for Hire and even episodes of radio and TV's Dragnet before his landmark role as TV prosecutor Perry Mason in 1957. Full-time radio actors in Hollywood and New York in the later 1940s were a shrinking but close-knit group, with crossover work on different networks to working on programs yet to be realized. Today we call them pilot shows, but back then they were known as audition recordings, made to bring before potential networks and program sponsors. And one in particular foreshadowed a well-known partnership on the air when Jack Webb and a man named Barton Yarborough co-starred in a pilot or audition for the radio series 3-4 Adventure in mid-1949. Here's a clip from it. Barton is heard first.
Well, lucky yonder. They're loading coffee right off of a train onto a big old boat.
Up these stairs.
Just stick right close to me now, son. I'll take care of it.
Where are you going?
Well, didn't the man say up these stairs?
Oh, Jex, come off it, will you? Do you think this baby-faced Lopez is going to talk to a convention? Both of you are staying right here, outside.
Well, all right, but can't you say it nice?
Barton Yarborough's thick southern drawl was tamed for the radio role he would take on that summer as Ben Romero, partner to Joe Friday, played by Jack Webb on Radio's Dragnet.
Skipper, them two men shot without asking any questions. They must be hot. When we get that slug, the ballistics can tell us whether that gun's been used on other jobs.
We got enough of their modus operandi to have the statistician give us a run-through on the IBM now.
One of them is left-handed.
Okay, be in surgery tomorrow morning at 9.
Neither Ben or I said much on the way home, but we were both thinking the same thing. I knew the chief was thinking it, too. Here were two men who'd shot a couple of police officers without asking any questions. Now, I suppose you've heard a lot of stories about what the force thinks of cop killers. Sure, we don't like to lose our friends and partners any better than anybody else would. Why not figure it this way? If these two guys would gun a couple of armed police officers, do you think they'd hesitate to shoot you, the unarmed citizen?
That was audio from the second broadcast of Dragnet ever, and the beginnings of a series that would last on radio for the next 8 years. After about 3 years in, Barton Yarborough passed away and was replaced with Ben Alexander, who became a fixture in the more than 300 episodes produced for NBC Radio. And 300 is also the approximate number of sound effects heard during each broadcast, keeping a team of 5 sound effects artists busy for every show.
Yeah, sounds like it. Come on. Can you see the car?
Wait a minute. Yeah,
You cover the passenger side. I'll come up on the driver's
right.
side. And watch it.
Joe, hustle. They're getting out of the car.
All right. Hold it up. Police officers.
Watch it, Joe.
Throw down the gun. All right, Ed. Let's give it back.
All right. Don't shoot. Don't shoot.
Jack Webb also pushed the boundaries of subject matter when it came to crimes and stories surrounding them. Never before had radio audiences heard the specifics of sex crime or heroin traffickers or about severely abused children. The format of which these shows were delivered was brought to the TV version, like the familiar opening.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
And the now famous wrap-up at the end of the show with conviction details.
Geraldine Ruth Winston and George Roland Winston were tried and convicted of robbery in the first degree, 5 counts. They received sentence as prescribed by law. Robbery in the first degree is punishable by imprisonment for a period of not less than 5 years in the state penitentiary.
With all of the pioneering moves Jack Webb made on radio and the fame that grew from his work in the medium, which would lead to the best-remembered television version of Dragnet, it was actually a movie that provided the inspiration to have Jack develop the series for over a year before its first audition. He was cast as a crime lab cop in the 1948 picture He Walked by Night and struck up a friendship with the film's technical advisor, Marty Wynn. Reportedly, they both discovered that they shared the belief that pure investigative procedure was dramatic enough without the melodrama of a private eye character. He was really inspired by their talks, and for a year, Jack started hanging out at police precincts and attending classes at the local police academy to pick up procedure and the lingo of the job, and he finally had all the parts necessary to see Dragnet through. He produced an audition recording, but still needed to seal the deal, which was to get approval from police. And reportedly, he sat down with the chief of the LAPD and played him his audition recording of Dragnet, and after about 15 minutes of listening, the chief of police actually threw him out. He would end up making some tweaks to that recording, and the rest, they say, is history. So that is the background and the story of how Dragnet came to be. And what you've just heard interspersed throughout this podcast was a presentation that I gave before I played the 1954 film version of Dragnet. At the event that I called Tune to Yesterday at the movies, there will be another one this year. I'm working on it currently, and we'll share some details about that in a future podcast. Coming up this Friday on Tune to Yesterday, we have an hour of sitcoms from Father Knows Best and The Mel Blanc Show, then it's Adventure from Dangerous Assignment and The Whistler. And this Saturday night at 10, it's an hour of horror from episodes of Macabre and The Hermit's Cave.
As I rose from the bed, its phosphorescent glow seemed to envelop me. We moved toward the door, and it opened without the touch of a hand. We seemed to glide down the stairs, out of doors. The wind that touched my face was like the refrain I'd heard over and over again. We moved along the street, I and the thing. With great speed, we covered the streets and were soon on the outskirts of the city. I could see now the place which was our destination.
At 11 o'clock this Saturday night, a variety show to lighten things up. It's The Magic Key of RCA from 1936. You can hear these programs Friday, March 10th and Saturday, March 11th from 10 to midnight on Tune to Yesterday on the air or as ever streaming at our website, wrvo.org. And that's going to do it for this week for the 20th podcast of the TTY Dialer. I hope you're enjoying them so far. I've heard from some listeners across the region, even across the country, who have been tuning in. I really do appreciate hearing from you. If you have a comment or a question for me about the TTY Dialer, Tune to Yesterday or Old Time Radio, just email me, mark@wrvo.org. That's mark@wrvo.org. All right, until next week, thanks a lot for listening. You'll hear from me then.